Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Two Footed Tackle Podcast. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on when and where you're watching this from. I'm your host, as always, Aris Matakos. We're here again for another week, international break. So, no club football from the men's aspect of side of things anyway. That was a pretty dull weekend when it comes to watching sport. But in Australia, we had a Sunday beautifulness of sport because you had the F1 Grand Prix for all the Formula 1 fans at like 5 p.m. and then you had the Cricket World Cup final at like 7:30. So we just went all the way through for Sunday, which was good to at least give us some form of enjoyment. But regardless, football is back. Club football is back next week. So yesterday, next week, this weekend. So can't wait for that. But there was obviously some football that we should and will speak about, as well as some off-field just insane. Which we'll of course speak about. But before we do, hope everyone has enjoyed their week. Maybe a little bit of a break from club football, necessary break from club football for some supporter bases. It was funny, as soon as Chelsea started actually playing well and winning, there's just a international break to just interrupt everything and ruin everything. So that's quite ironic from a Chelsea perspective and from a Melbourne Victory perspective as well. Start the season undefeated with 2 wins and 2 draws and bang, international break. So yeah, you can't win them all, but it's okay. We move. Like I said, I hope everyone has enjoyed their week. I have gallivanting around as per over the weekend, having a nice chill one and then also just enjoying it. So that's very nice. As always, I implore you all to subscribe to the Two Footed Tackle Podcast on TikTok or on YouTube, firstly. Stay on here and subscribe with you first. Notification bell and notification bell so you don't miss out on any clips. In case you can't catch the full episode, there are some clips of the main talking points that go out on Wednesdays and Thursdays. I try to anyway, Australian time. And then, yeah, notification bell and then like the podcast as well. That would mean the world, as well as making sure you guys head on over to the TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter, Two Foot Tackle Podcast, for any updates and just all the general Two Foot Tackle Podcast content. Like I said, if you can't catch a full episode, there's always highlights, clips, tidbits of information that you should know about the episode on all the platforms. It does mean the world, as well as all the audio platforms, Two Foot Tackle Podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts. Like I said every week, even if you listen on YouTube, even if you watch on YouTube, just head on over to the audio platforms, give it a subscribe, give it a follow, subscribe, rating out of 5, thumbs up, or whatever it is. It does mean more than the world. So yes, that is all for the preamble. Got some things to cover. We'll speak very, very briefly on the European qualifiers, because I feel like despite, I say the European, all the international football that happened over the weekend, because I feel like I should just mention it. And then we'll crack straight into the evident debacle and cover all the bases around that, what that means for my club as well as Man City. So that's going to be a very interesting talking point. Then we're going to take a plane straight back down to Australia. We're going to touch on the Matilda squad that has been announced for our 2 friendlies against Canada in the coming weeks. The Socceroos, they had a very good win against Bangladesh, and they play Palestine in 2 days' time at the time of recording. So touch on that. And of course, the national second division / tier has been announced today. So we're going to be touching on all the tidbits surrounding that. So pretty jam-packed episode of not really actual football-related content, not football games, but still football content. So let's crack things on, and let's go immediately to the European qualifiers. I say European qualifiers, the football that has happened. It started midweek. Funnily enough, Australia were actually one of the very first games to have played, of course, with the Asian qualification campaign and as well as the African World Cup qualification campaign have both kicked off, both in their very early stages. I say that the African qualification campaign is just insane because of how it's structured. For those who don't know, that it goes from groups A to I. It goes from groups A to I, and then the winners of those groups advance to, I think it's the next round, and then the second place teams have to do a playoff to go to the next round. And then the next round after that is even more insane. It's something along those lines. It's pretty mental. So I mean, just looking at some of these, groups, they're pretty tough. So, yeah, that's just that. That obviously started the Asia qualification campaign. Started Australia got a lovely win over Bangladesh. We'll touch on that in more detail a little bit later on. But yeah, it was a lovely performance from the boys. Moving on, we got some European qualifiers, of course, happening on the next day. Spain beat Cyprus, Georgia and Scotland battled out to a 2-2 draw. Group F has been basically all but decided now, with Sweden getting absolutely demolished by Azerbaijan 3-0, which is insane. I mean, Sweden have gone past this golden generation that they've had, maybe 7-8 years ago. But still, you're looking at the team now: Kulusevski, Forsberg, Lindelof, Robin Olsen, who's still a Premier League caliber goalkeeper. So, yeah. Really interesting what's happening on in Sweden, as my camera just is having a horrible focus day today. So fingers crossed that can stay and fix up. But yeah, but apart from that, the U-17s World Cup as well. The U-17s World Cup as well included some unbelievable results, as New Caledonia losing all three of their games, 10-0, 9-0 and 5-0. Which is just awesome. New Zealand losing all three of their games as well. South Korea losing all three of their games. Poland losing all three of their games. And then Canada as well as Panama losing all three of their games. So just one of those kind of tournaments that will obviously progress in the coming weeks. So any bright prospects playing for other teams? Not that I can see. I just clicked on the England versus Brazil game and I couldn't say any names I recognize, so there you go. But yeah, obviously moving on, England Group C has been basically all but wrapped up with one game to go. It's going to go down to that last game to see gets automatic qualification. So that's obviously good for the drama of everything. Group H, He's looking like a very, very competitive group with one game to go. There's going to be a lot of permutations surrounding that. And then France beat Gibraltar 14-0, which is just awesome. Exactly what you want. And then, of course, some other African qualification as well, some Asian qualification, which we'll carry on until the midweek before we return on Friday for the A-League and, of course, Saturday night for the Premier League. But yeah, let's go through all the groups like we did last time and just give a little bit of a recap before we move on. So Group A is all but decided. Spain and Scotland will be going through first and second place. So that's all but done. That is all confirmed on that kind of aspect. Norway out. Don't ever get a playoff place. So Norway with a team of Erling Haaland and Martin Odegaard, two of the better players in the Premier League and one of, if not the best player in the world. Not going to qualify for the World Cup. Didn't qualify for the Euros last time. I actually can't remember the last time they actually qualified for a major tournament. So, issues because their squad, even though it's pretty top heavy with, Odegaard and Haaland. I mean, if we take a look at these games, you've got Odegaard, you've got Haaland, but you've got the likes of Oscar Bob, who is a sensational talent. Sander Berg plays for Burnley, who's very good. Like, you've got these players who are pretty good, and they just can't seem to get it all ticking together. You've got Sorloth as well, Christoph Ayer. Yeah, really, like, they've got talent, but they just can't seem to put it together. I don't know, it's really weird. So, they're going to be out, or they're going to be going to Germany next year, which is very, very interesting. Group B is decided. Unfortunately, Greece, Netherlands did what they needed to do against Ireland with a 1-0 win, which killed off all chances of Greece going through automatically, which is a big shame. France and Netherlands go through automatically. Greece will be going through to the playoffs, which is bound to be a very, very interesting kind of very interesting couple of games. Last time Greece made the playoffs of a major tournament qualification campaign was 2018 World Cup qualification campaign, and it was a 4-1 loss to Croatia. 4-1 loss? I think it was like maybe it was 6-3 over the two legs, but they lost 4-1 in Croatia, I think it was. That was that was disappointing. But regardless, Group C, like I said, basically all but confirmed. England will finish top of that group, and it is between Italy and Ukraine to whoever finishes second and third, as they are both equal on points. And what happened? And yeah, they're both equal on points, and with one game to go, and they verse each other. Italy do have the advantage of the head-to-head, so they can afford a draw, whereas Ukraine do need to win. Group D, Turkey are through automatically, top of their group as well, I think. Yes, top of their group as well, I'm pretty sure. Assuming that they can get a point against Wales away from home. Wales still within a shout for automatic qualification should Croatia lose to Armenia and Wales beat Turkey. So that's going to be interesting. Group E, once again, very, very competitive. You've got Moldova, Poland, Czech Republic, and Albania all within the shouts for automatic qualification. You've got Albania top of that group with Czech Republic, Poland, and Moldova all sitting behind them with a 4 points only separating Moldova and Albania with one game to go, whereas only 2 points separating Czech Republic and Moldova who sit in second. So there you go. Group F is decided. Austria and Belgium are through. Group D, similarly, Serbia and Hungary are through. Montenegro finished third. Group H, in a very similar vein to a group, in a very similar vein to Group C, and even group E to a certain extent. It's very competitive. You've got Finland's finishing on 15 points, won't make it through the qualification campaign, which is insane. But you've got Kazakhstan, Slovenia battling out in the final game of the qualification campaign to see who can qualify automatically. Group I sees Switzerland and Romania through, and Group J sees Slovakia, that is absolutely not how you say the name, Slovakia and Portugal through automatically. So there you go. That's just the roundup of all the European qualification campaigns for the Euros. Congratulations to those who entered the ballot and got their tickets, by the way. I think there's another ballot coming up soon as well, so fingers crossed we can get over there and maybe do this podcast from Europe. That would be something, doing this podcast hungover in a beer garden in Germany. One can only hope, hey? One can only hope. But yes, that is all I wanted to touch on for that. Let's move on to the meat of the podcast. The Everton Football Club, Everton FC, have been deducted 10 points effective immediately for breaching financial fair play regulations. Now, I'm going to bring up the club statement. I'm going to bring up the club statement and read it to you in full to get a full grasp of the situation. So, the Everton Football Club is both shocked and disappointed by the ruling of the Premier League's commission. The club believes that the commission has imposed a wholly disproportionate and unjust sporting sanction. The club has already communicated its intentions to appeal the decision to the Premier League. The appeal process will now commence, and the club's case will be heard by an appeals board appointed to the Premier League's rules in due course. Everton maintains that it is open and transparent in information that it has provided to the Premier League, and that it has always respected the integrity of the process. The club does not recognise the finding that it had failed to act within the utmost good faith, and does not understand this to have been an allegation made by the Premier League during the course of the proceedings. Both the harshness and severity of the sanctions imposed by the Commission are neither a fair nor a reasonable reflection of the evidence submitted. The club will also monitor with great interest. This is a very, very interesting extract. The club will also monitor with great interest the decisions made in any other cases concerning the Premier League's profit and sustainability rules. Everton cannot comment on this matter any further until the appeals process has been concluded. And breathe, essentially. I'm going to quickly check the Premier League's Twitter and see if they released a statement and see what they said about it. I would assume that they did and have. As I scroll all the way down, but very, very interesting, very interesting statement, which had a lot of moving parts and really stamps. It was a really strong statement from Everton. I would appreciate that if I was an Everton supporter, the fact that they really stood their ground and they didn't kind of hide or, yeah, they didn't hide or they didn't make excuses. They were like, no, this is bullshit and we're going to go for it. So, yeah, evident have been deducted 10 points, for breaching financial fair play or the Premier League's profit and sustainability rules. This opens up a stupidly big can of worms because Everton, but from my knowledge anyway, had one charge put against them. And that charge, from my knowledge, and I could be wrong, so please correct me if I am, but that was not even based on spending money for players. It was based on stadium spend. So, yeah, this is opening up a can of worms. The Premier League clubs who got relegated last year, so Southampton, Leicester, and the other club that got relegated, in which I can't think of right now, they are threatening legal action. I should probably know who that is. They're threatening legal action, which will be very interesting to see what develops. There is a sort of semi precedent surrounding legal action made against other clubs by other clubs because of something that they did in a football avenue, and that was Sheffield United against West Ham in the mid-2000s regarding the Tevez and Mascherano debacle. Leeds were the other team that went down. So yeah, Leicester, Leeds and Southampton, the three teams that are threatening legal action against Everton or are looking to pursue that avenue. Obviously, that key extract of Everton monitoring closely the decisions made by the Premier League surrounding other cases basically heavily implies that they will be looking at the sanctions posed on both Chelsea and Man City, I should say, and will be, I'm sure there'll be another statement surrounding that depending on the decisions. But look, Everton, we'll speak on the footballing aspect of it a little bit later because I don't really think it makes a difference in terms of the grand scheme of things, right? Yeah, they might not finish higher on the table, but I still think Everton will survive. So this is a big moment, monumental moment in the Premier League, I think. Monumental moment because this is the first time a team has been heavily sanctioned, footballing sanctioned, because of financial fair play. Well, I'm just going to label this as financial fair play, even though it's technically not, but it technically is. This, whether or not Everton were just in being found guilty, I don't know. I haven't read the legal documents. I'm not a lawyer. I've got no idea, right? I'm just going to assume the Premier League Commission have acted in a fair and lawful manner and have adjudicated Everton to be guilty. Everton were compliant in the process. They provided documents. They were very transparent throughout the whole process and throughout the whole proceedings. So you can't fault them for that. I think where people are very confused and concerned and also angered by is the fact that Everton were cordial in the processes. They provided documents. They were very transparent. They were like, yes, okay, you were investigating us. We're an open book type of thing, in order to get this process done quickly, and also it acts as a mitigating factor. Well, you think it acts as a mitigating factor when it comes to the sentencing. Quite clearly, it hasn't, because 10 points for one charge with being like transparent in the process as well is pretty insane. It's pretty insane, right? This opens up a big can of worms, because what happens now? What happens now? Everton, if Everton go down, I'd hate to imagine what would happen if Everton go down. I can tell you what will definitely happen. Everton will beat Manchester United on the weekend. I'll tell you that for free. A raucous, it's at Goodison, isn't it? Right? I'm almost certain it's at Goodison. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 3:30 a.m. on a Monday. So that'd be what? That'd be the late kickoff on Sunday. A raucous Goodison Park, a defiant Goodison Park against a very vulnerable and bleeding United. Yeah, Everton win that comfortably, 3-0. So there's that. I'll give you that. Not even prediction. I said the future. So yeah, this will create a big ripple effect for both City and Chelsea, which I'm sure I'll touch on, but also for other teams in the league, for Everton themselves, whether or not they can bounce back from this. And also, it puts into question a lot of things about the ownership of some clubs. Do clubs want to be owned by billionaires who don't really know anything about football? Because you see the innocent consequences of that, of being owned by a billionaire who doesn't know anything about football, when you look at like Todd Bowley, and all he's done is just spent stupid amounts of money on really bad players like Aubameyang and fucking these guys, right? So you can look at it like that, but also the more sinister consequences is, oh, they're going to drive this club into the ground because they don't know what they're doing, and they're going to side fucking Klaassen and Iwobi for 40 million and fucking Damari Gray, these guys, right? So these like damaging, like that cumulatively could be very damaging, right? Everton, I saw Everton obviously thought that their squad has been a lot better than what it was, probably dating back all the way to when Benitez was in charge, even before then, probably even during COVID. They probably thought their squad was a lot better than what it was. They probably found their peak under Ancelotti, like Calvert-Lewin and James and like ball, like players balling out, right? So they probably overestimated the ability of their squad. They probably thought that they would progress further in the league. They probably thought they'd finish in the European places, which would have given them a big revenue influx. Similarly, they probably thought they would have been able to finish better in the FA Cup and the Carabao Cup, which gives them that extra bit of top up, as well as performing better means more commercial revenue, shirt sales, sponsorships, etc. That has been the case. They've sucked. They've nearly gone down twice. And right, and this season, they might end up going down. And if they do go down, it would be catastrophic. Absolutely catastrophic. Because you can't, like, the stadium they're going to have in the championship is going to be fucked. They can't sustain that. Right? The maintenance for that stadium with the revenue that they're going to bring in is going to be absurd. The wages that some of the players are on, I hate to think what like Pickford's on and Calvert-Lewin and these players, I'd hate to think what they're on in terms of money. And their squad as it stands is far too good to go down. Like their squad is too good to go down player for player. So there's going to be a mass exodus. Do they have the youth to promote and to emphasize and to put a little bit of a burden on to perform? I don't know their squad that well. I know that they've got a couple of different players. They started a young centre half, I'm pretty sure, who's played quite well. You've got like Mikalenko and these players who while aren't youth academy products, are still quite young and can still progress and can still carry the team forward and have age on their side. But yeah, it's a, from a footballing perspective, regardless of what I've just said, I don't think from a footballing perspective Everton will go down. I don't know. It's really weird, right? Because Everton are 2 points outside of, or like, how am I going to word this without sounding kind of contradicting to whatever I've just said? I think from a purely footballing perspective, I still think Everton will be fine. I don't think they'll go down. They're only 2 points inside the relegation zone. If they beat United this weekend, which I think they will, and other results fall their way, which I think they will as well, they're going to be out of the relegation zone. So while they might be in a little bit more of a precarious position, I still think their squad is good enough. I still think Sean Dyche has finally got this team ticking and playing the way that he wants to play. I think they'll be fine. It's just the overall ramifications from a business perspective, which could heavily hurt Everton, because they're going to appeal this. The legal costs and the financial costs around appealing it is going to be drastic. If it doesn't go their way, what does that happen there? Are they going to be in more debt? Is there other sanctions that we don't know about? Financial sanctions, how much are they going to be fined? I think from an Everton perspective, from a footballing perspective for Everton, they'll be fine. From a business perspective for Everton, this could be quite, quite bad. And I think you need to look at it from both avenues, because in this day and age, football clubs are run partly as a business and then as a football club. So I think the business side of things is far more, or could be far more damaging than the football side of things of them just going down, if that makes sense. However, in saying that, despite what I just said, I don't think they'll go down. But if they do, it's going to be drastic. It's going to be bad. And I think, like I briefly mentioned before, what this has, like the impact that this has on so many other things, specifically Man City and Chelsea, it's fucked. Like, it's fucked. Everton were docked one charge Everton were charged against one thing, one breach, and they got docked 10 points. You want to do the math? Man City will be docked 1,026 points. So, okay, this is why that extract, like I mentioned earlier in the evidence statement about being mindful of other sanctions handed down by the Premier League should they find other teams guilty. Realistically, if the Premier League are consistent, look, I'm saying this as a Chelsea supporter. I'm a Chelsea supporter. This is my worst nightmare as a Chelsea supporter. Because if the Premier League are consistent, if the Premier League are consistent in their sanctions towards breaches of this kind, Chelsea and Man City should not only be docked points, they should be relegated multiple leagues, arguably even liquidated, because of how much both of those clubs would have been found guilty to financially doping in comparison to Everton. It's absurd. Chelsea have been financially doping since 2005. Man City have been financially doping since 2011, and both have been doing it on a drastic scale, on a stupid scale, right? And while they haven't been found guilty officially, there's no smoke without fire. And like I said, as a Chelsea supporter, this is horrendous. But they have to be consistent, and they have to be, okay, Everton, this was your sanction. We are going to take the permutations around that sanction and how they calculated that sanction into it for Man City and Chelsea should they be found guilty. It can't be a fine. You're going to fine Chelsea how much money, and Todd Bowley is just going to pay and he's going to be fine. It needs to be football sanctions, because that's how you properly damage a football club. That's how you properly damage a football club. So, I don't know. Like, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know, because it's kind of like the floodgates, right? I don't think it was ever going to... This might sound hindsight a little bit pox, right? With hindsight especially, but I don't ever think the Premier League were just going to announce one day, oh yeah, we've liquidated Man City, or we've excluded Man City for the league because of financial fair play. I don't think that was ever going to happen. I think there needed to be a smaller case to kind of... It's like London buses, right? They don't come for ages, then one comes, and then they all come, right? It's the floodgates. It's as soon as one thing happens, it's a domino effect. I think that's what needed to happen in order for proper sanctions to be handed down. I don't know. It's scary, right, as a Chelsea supporter, because, fuck. It's not my fault. I didn't spend the money. I didn't fucking spend $600 million in a year, and I didn't financial dope, and I'm not a fucking owner of a Russian oligarch. And the same with Man City fans. Man City fans aren't manipulating their commercial income and manipulating their sponsorship income because they fucking own the companies that sponsor their team. They're not doing that. And they're gonna be the innocent bystanders and the what's the word I'm looking for? They're gonna be caught in the crossfire. And it goes back to that question of celebrating things, right? That's actually the word. I'm gonna touch on this briefly because I know we're ticking across half an hour, but I just put the word on my run sheet. I just put celebrating. Everton fans, right? Because I think this still relates to Everton. Last year, or the year before, when Calvert-Lewin scores that goal against Burnley, was it? Or Palace? Like, maybe it's a different scale, but I will relate it back to Chelsea. Like, that moment, no one can ever take that moment away from you. No one can ever take being in that stadium, watching it at home, and seeing that big, lanky, 6'4" guy from, I don't even know where the fuck he's from, fucking dive his head towards a ball and score in the 84th minute and win you guys a game to keep you guys up. No one's ever going to take that away from you. However, in retrospect, is it a bit like, fuck, in the same vein, that moment here, that's behind me, Drogba, right? Mata in towards Drogba, what about that? Chelsea's man for the big occasion scores his biggest ever goal in what may be his last ever match for the club. You can't ride it, right? That moment there was financially doped, right? And the subsequent penalty and the subsequent win and the subsequent trophies and even the prior trophies have been financially doped, should Chelsea be found guilty, of course. Can Chelsea supporters celebrate that now? Can Chelsea supporters sit back and think, I still... Because, okay, I wasn't that cognizant of that moment, right? I wasn't that in tune with everything in that moment. But I was 2 years ago or 3 years ago for the Havertz moment. And that was one of the most joyous mornings and days of my life when Kai Havertz rounds Edison and scores. Knowing that that was financially dope, should Chelsea be found guilty, I kind of sit back and think, all right, you're not going to take the moments away from me. But in hindsight, it's like, fuck. And then to think about the biggest extreme case of the Aguero moment for Man City. It's like, fuck. That moment was unreal, but it was financially dope. So, I don't know. I've never been in this situation as a fan before. Because of the grand scale of it all, it's not like one player has been financially doped or has done whatever, because one player in a team sport really doesn't make a big difference. Like, they're very interchangeable. So yeah, I just don't know. It's one of those things where I guess we just have to wait and see, because City, obviously, we're under investigation. We're announcing we're going to be under investigation. Chelsea are certainly under investigation. Everton, we knew, the findings come out. The appeals process could happen, and then bang, they could be fine. But yeah, scary times for a lot of fans of a lot of clubs who are completely innocent in this whole thing. I didn't choose to financially dope Chelsea, but I'm going to pay the consequences as a fan, seeing my team in fucking League 2 or whatever it will be. So, I don't know. Still be there, of course. But, yeah. I don't know. I feel sorry for Everton fans, though. Yeah, like, on a whole, feel very sorry for Everton fans, because it's not their fault. And they've had to endure enough shit as it is because their football clubs have been below par. So, just for this to be added on is, I can only imagine, torturous. So, yeah, commiserations. And, yeah, really bad for Everton fans. But, fuck, yeah. I don't know. I really don't know. I guess we're going to have to sit back here and talk about it in a couple of months' time when more findings have been announced and more things have been announced, and when they do appeal, I will definitely be on here speaking about that, because yeah, I've spoken about this for a long time. So I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and speak about and get on a flight and speak about some Tillies and some Socceroos and the National Second Division. So yes, I'll be uno momento if I was Spanish. Okay, we are back for the third, I reckon, is probably what it's going to be. 32 minutes. Hopefully I don't bubble on too long. But yes, let's move on. Let's come back down to Australia. I want to speak on the Tilly squad first, before we move on to what Socceroos were able to do in the National Second Division. So yeah, Tilly squad has been announced for their two friendlies against Canada on the 2nd of December and the 6th of December, so in a couple of weeks' time. Both of them will be on 2:00 Australian Eastern Daylight Time, which is perfect. One of them's on a Friday, and the other one is on a Tuesday, so maybe in the background while at work is probably the go for that one. But yeah, let's take a look at the squad. So the squad is relatively similar to what it has been for the longest time. A lot of familiar faces. So you got Mackenzie Arnold, Ellie Kumpter, Steph Catley, Kyra Cooney, Cross, Caitlin Ford, Mary Fowler, Katrina Gorry, Charlie Grant, Claire Hunt, Alana Kennedy, Sam Kerr, A.V. Luke, Holly McNamara, which I'll touch on because that's heartbreaking, Tegan Micah, Courtney Nevin, Claire Polkinghorne, Hayley Razzol, Charlesy Rule, Amy Sayer, Emily Van Egmond, Claire Wheeler, Lee Williams, and Tamika Yallop. So a lot of A-League women's, a couple of A-League women's representations in there, which is always good to see. So yeah, obviously with Katrina Gorry and Charlie Grant both leaving their clubs, rumours about whether or not, about where they're going to go. I think there was rumours about Katrina Gorry coming back to Mel or coming back to Australia, I think. Yeah, that would have been, I don't know if that's going to happen, but I would like to see her in the WSL because I feel like she's too good. I would love to have her in Australia, of course, because having the best players in this country would be unreal, but that's not where this league is at the moment. So put her in the WSL, put her at, like, I don't know if she wants to go up to like Leicester or something, go with Courtney Nevin or whatever. Yeah, that would be unreal because I think she's good enough. Similar story for Charlie Grant as well. So yeah, squad fine, obviously no Vine and a couple of other players, no Chidiak as well, which is Meh, but once again, it's two friendlies against Canada. I don't really think that. I think what we saw for the Olympics qualification campaigns, those qualification games, I think that's probably going to be the squad that we see a lot more of, which was very similar to the squad that we played at the World Cup. So, yeah, I don't know, the Paris Olympics are obviously the next year. So, yeah, there's that. I do want to speak briefly on Holly McNamara, because that is just so heartbreaking. She's one of the better players in the A-League women's competition. She has been lighting it up so far this season. She's what, scored 6 goals in 5 games or something, scored the winner on the weekend for Melbourne City against Newcastle. And did she do her knee? Did she not? We don't know, but she's got heavily injured. What we think is heavily injured in scoring the last goal, like the last kick of the game. It's just heartbreaking because Holly McNamara is one of those players who kind of need to start stepping up and really taking over and really start asserting herself as a Matilda's caliber footballer, because you got Razzo Ford and Kerr, who are all in the twilight of their careers, probably just on their prime into the twilight of their careers. And you've got Fowler, who is this 20-year-old centrepiece in which you're going to build the national team on for the next 15 years. You need pieces around her to complement her. McNamara is definitely one of those players. She is extremely, extremely talented. And for a player that talented to have that history, with injuries, and to suffer another maybe ACL injury whilst scoring the winner on the weekend after scoring a goal earlier in the game, it's just such a unfortunate situation, because that was Holly McNamara scores a brace, City win in the last kick of the game, but she does her knee. It's like, fuck, man, she can't catch a break. Like, she's so talented, and she's shown it over a couple of years. She just hasn't been able to stay fit, which is heartbreaking, because like I said, she, alongside Mary Fowler, can be the next generation of Matilda's footballers, in my opinion. But it's just so unfortunate. So fingers crossed it's not a severe injury, and she can get back and start playing at a level that she knows she can play at, because, yeah, it's just really, really unfortunate. Really, really unfortunate. But yeah, it's one of those things. I think Chidiak will come into the squad should McNamara not be fit in time. And if they do need a replacement, I think it'll be Chidiak, so it's fine. So yeah, Chidiak will win, but I think they'll go with Chidiak for that. She probably should have been in the squad already, actually, thinking about it. But anyway, one of those things. Let's move on. And let's speak on the Socceroos. Socceroos had a lovely 7-0 win over Bangladesh. Very funny. Very funny win. Very funny seeing Harry Souttar not even need to jump to score the first goal, which I thought was just absolutely hilarious. McLaren hat-trick, one of the worst hat-tricks you'll ever see. Probably should have scored 7, so I don't know, maybe that's a little bit of indictment on him. Luongo played well. The penalty was abysmal. Absolutely shocking. Should have done a lot better with that penalty. And I thought Duke took his 2 goals well. The first one was quite funny. The first one was quite good. The second one was quite funny. Overall, a good, fine performance from the Socceroos. I didn't think it's quite ironic to say, right? It's quite funny to say, because I don't know if we're in a position to be greedy about the performances and the results we can get. But a 7-0 win at home to Bangladesh with your striker scoring a hat-trick is probably the expected result. So I don't think we can come out of this and say, oh my God, we're exceptional, or oh my God, we're going to be terrible in the next World Cup or the next Asian Cup. I think it was just a fine performance. I think a lot of the footballers that played just were able to get miles into the legs, get K's in the legs, back into the Socceroos shirt, getting used to the system, getting familiarised with the system again. I thought Luongo, his first appearance in a while, I thought he played well. Yordi Boss, I thought, was great. I thought Toure, or Yenji off the bench, I should say, was quite good. Duke up front was great as well, took his 2 goals quite well. Souttar was solid. McLaren off the bench scored a hat-trick, so you can't really ask for much more from your number 9. The wingers were able to provide width and come inside quite well. Slight concern about Boss and Goodwin playing on the same side. I feel like you could cause yourself a little bit of issues there, because both of them are really, really like to hug the touchline and maintain the width. So probably going to be a little bit of a tactical development in that aspect. So it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. But yeah, overall, fine performance. I don't really think we can sit here and scream from the rooftops about a poor performance or an exceptional performance when Bangladesh aren't great. They are like the worst side we've faced in a long, long time, and it showed, because it was just, yeah, comfortable win. Can't really say a whole lot more. Follow that up with against Palestine, win that comfortably, and we can get through this international break with no injuries and just winning, which would be good, because we need to do that a lot more, I think, as a soccer is. So yes, there's that. Okay, let's move on, speak on the big topic, is, and it's what we're going to finish up with. The National Second Division has been announced, to much rejoice across plenty of football fans across the country. It has been teased and has been planned and has been kind of said it's going to happen for a long time, and it has finally happened. We have a lot of the details surrounding it. I'll read a little bit of the statement from Football Australia. So today, Monday, 20th of November, marks a significant milestone in the Australian football ecosystem as Football Australia officially announces a selection of 8 foundation clubs for the inaugural national second tier competition set to commence in March/April 2025. After a rigorous and comprehensive application process, the following initial foundation teams have been selected based on their strong proposals and readiness to meet the standards set for the NST competition. So those clubs are, I'm sure as you all know, but they're Appia Leichhardt, Avondale, Marconi, Preston Lions, South Melbourne, Sydney Olympics, Sydney United, and Wollongong Wolves. So from the 8 teams, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 from New South Wales, and the 3 from Melbourne, obviously being South Melbourne, Preston Lions, and Avondale. Obviously the Wollongong being the 5th New South Wales team, but the non-Sydney team, with obviously Appia Marconi, Sydney Olympic, and Sydney United being based out of Sydney. So yes, that's what the admin out of the way. Starting in March or April 2025, so next year, or as in the next footballing calendar, the end of the next footballing calendar. Yeah, no promotion relegation to start off, which we all pretty much knew. There will be 2 to 4 more teams added in the next coming months into the new year, which, fingers crossed, allows for expansion across a properly nationally wide competition. So hopefully some teams in Brisbane, Adelaide, maybe even Hobart, and maybe even WA if that permits. But yes, overall, I think it's good. I think it's definitely needed. I think it is as this camera just says, having a horrendous focus there. I think it's needed. I think it's a big step forward. Like the statement said, it's a big step forward in the football ecosystem for Australia. Definitely much needed. And I think the talk around, obviously, there being no promotion relegation, the fact that it's starting a year further back than what it was initially meant to start at, and of course there being no teams from WA or from no teams from WA, South Australia, Brisbane or Hobart or whatever, I think those issues are completely valid and I completely agree with those people who are affected by those decisions. But I think we need to prioritize a sustainable and a longevity competition, if that makes sense, like a sustainable competition that has longevity and that is self-sufficient. If that means all of these issues need to be fixed in the future and can't be addressed now, then so be it. I think that's a sacrifice that we need to make as a sport in this country, because we're doing something that no other sport has done in this country, which I think not a lot of people have realized. This division, or this national second tier, is the foundation block for a fully functional sporting pyramid that goes from a top division to a second to a third to a fourth division. That hasn't happened, and that isn't a thing in Australian sport. So football is breaking ground. Football is breaking ground, and they're gonna have teething problems, and there's gonna be issues. But for it to be fully sustainable and for it to be a thing that will last forever, essentially, is what they're gonna hope for. These issues, like the no promotion relegation, like there only being 8 teams initially, and all of them being from Vic and New South Wales, I think there needs to be a compromise between having everything that we want straight away and the fact that it's not going to be sustainable. So I think, like, in an ideal world, it starts at the end of next, at the end of this footballing calendar, so it starts in August of next year or April of next year or whenever. And there's seven, there's 18 teams. There's a minimum of two teams from every state. Promotion relegation to a second division which has 12 teams, and minimum from at least 18 from every state to start off with. Yeah, there's obviously like no salary cap or a financial system that allows teams to spend without being hamstrung by a very, very strict salary cap. No limits on visa players, or at least visa players limited to a limit on visa players that allows for the promotion of youth players whilst also keeping the ability of the league or the overall quality of the league quite high. A properly run youth system, properly run academies that are affordable, etc. But at the end of the day, football in this country right now is unfixable in its current form. I think in order to fix football in this country, we need to completely tear it up and start again. Whilst that is completely unreasonable, completely unfeasible, and in an ideal world, it'd be great to just turn everything into dust and start again. Obviously, can't do that. I think this National Second Division is starting fresh, a new concept that isn't currently in place. We're not changing anything. We are starting fresh. I think it gives every team a clean slate. It gives the competition a clean slate. It gives Football Australia a little bit of a clean slate to start again and be like, okay, this is what we're doing, and this is the future. I think overall, good initiative taken. And at the end of the day, we can speak about all the negatives, but let's speak about the positives. Let's speak about, okay, we finally got that proper footballing culture back at a professional level. Imagine the fixtures: South Melbourne versus Preston. Imagine those away days. Imagine Sydney United versus Sydney Olympic, or all of these rivalries. Imagine Marconi and Appia. This is what we wanted when the A-League came in. These are the derbies. This is the history. This is the limbs, the scenes, the grassroots football that will now be played at a professional level, and a level that can be represented on a grand stage. This is exactly what we've always wanted. And like I said, there will be teething issues. There will be little issues here and there, especially in the early stages of it. But give it 5, give it 10 years, give it time to get a fully developed ecosystem and an economy within itself. I think this will be very, very good. And I think I'm happy with the 8 teams. I think Wollongong are a very shrewd pick. I didn't think Football Australia would have the balls to pick Wollongong, but they did. So I'm happy that they did. I think the four Sydney clubs were pretty much no-brainers. I think Appia, Marconi, Sydney Olympic, and Sydney United are pretty much locked away. Sydney United, we obviously all know the issues surrounding their fan base, but you like to think lessons have been learnt. Obviously, the three Melbourne clubs, South Melbourne, I think, were a no-brainer. Preston were interesting choice. I wouldn't have had them in personally, but I understand why people do have them in. And Avondale as well. I probably wouldn't have had them in. I probably would have had maybe other clubs in from Melbourne, but they're in, which is awesome for them. So yeah, overall, good. Happy with the clubs that are in. This is exactly what we wanted from a new division. This is exactly what everything around, and the this is going to be the closest thing to the old NSL that we're ever going to get. So for those fans, for those lapsed fans who love the NSL, and once that folded, they were discarded, that they lost the love for the game in this country, this is your avenue back. This is your avenue back, because the National Second Division will be on par with the A-League, in my opinion, if it's done properly. It will be not a competitor, but it will be two top divisions, right? And eventually, they'll combine to create the Australian Football League, and then slowly we'll get a pyramid. I think because the franchise agreements between A-League clubs and the APL are fucking stupid. We all know that, right? So overall, happy, like I said. And I think this point needs to be reiterated. This point needs to be reiterated more and more. This is the start of grassroots football in this country being legitimized and being played at a professional level. Because you've got these clubs like South Melbourne, like Appia, like Marconi, clubs with rich, really rich history with a lot of lineage that have created some unbelievable sporting talents, right? Both on the field and off the field, right? We need to start highlighting these clubs more because these are the, like, this is the soul and this is the core of Australian football. So giving them a professional platform will revitalize football in this country. I think that's beyond the shadow of a doubt in terms of a debate. And I think when you think about, like, think about a South Melbourne versus Preston fixture, think about an Appia versus Marconi, Sydney United versus Sydney Olympic. Think about these fixtures. Think about the limbs. Think about the stakes, the jeopardy. It's all going to culminate into a very exciting, very entertaining, and hopefully a very well-run league that is sustainable. They're the key things, in my opinion. So that's just all I wanted to say on the National Second Division. I feel like that's a good closing statement. If I was to pick four more clubs, to come in, I would go, I'm not going to sit here and say clubs because I'm not knowledgeable enough to sit here and say with authority I think these clubs should be in. I would go with one more in Melbourne. Oh, first I'd go with four. I'd go with one more in Melbourne. I would go with one in Brisbane, one in Adelaide, and one in Hobart. Yeah, one more in Melbourne, Brisbane, Adelaide, Hobart. They're the four that I would go with. They're the four that I would go with. I think you need to, maybe you go two in Brisbane and knock the other one out of Melbourne. But I think you need to accentuate, if that's even a word, you need to really emphasise the strengths that Australia have got. And the NPL Victoria and NPL New South Wales are the two strongest NPL leagues. So you need to get those clubs in, legitimise it, and then you can bring in the other clubs as well. That's just the way it is. And also the richest ones as well, for the most part. So yeah, there's that. That is all for the talking points. Let's move on to the preview of all the games that are happening this weekend. Australia vs Palace Lion, win that. Just win it. City versus Liverpool, that's going to be a very, very entertaining game played at a very high level, I'm sure. MacArthur versus Melbourne Victory on Friday night. Please, Victory, win that, for God's sake. Yeah, apart from that, Everton will beat United. Lock that away. That will 100% happen. And then, yeah, that is all. And we'll be back next week for some more football chat. So, yes, thank you all very much for watching another episode of the Two Foot Tackle Podcast. If you have stuck around, I thank you very much for that. It does mean the world. Make sure you subscribe, notification bell, all the socials, all the audio platforms, like I said in the beginning. Make sure you subscribe. Like I said, see you guys next week. Stay well, stay safe, and goodbye.